You are listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographer Series 2023. Artistic direction, Chris Standfest. Co-funded by the European Union in the frame of the project Lifelong Burning, Futures Lost and Found. Today's guest is James Batchelor. James is a choreographer, dancer and dance teacher from Australia. Now based in Berlin, he works internationally. Before the second showing of his piece Shortcuts to Familiar Places at Schauspielhaus Vienna, James sat down with Chris Standfest. They discussed the ways in which James' mentor Ruth Osborne, as well as the legendary Gertrud Bodenwiese, shaped the work. They also touch on the specific excitement of showing it in Vienna, where Bodenwiese lived before she had to flee from the Nazis. They further reflect on how expression or Ausdruckstanz is re-entering the current dance landscape.
Hello, James.
Hello.
You've been here now for 14 days, or was your stay shorter?
It was a little bit shorter. I came on Monday last week.
Yeah, okay. Because yeah. I remember you have a busy schedule, right?
I do. I'm traveling all the time. Yeah. So a big part of my year is made up of these kind of situations nowadays.
Yeah. I would like to start with something maybe completely different. It's interesting because, I mean, of course, I followed a bit what you did, or what you would call the artistic career, or maybe also the way. But in a way, I was curious when I went here, what brought you to Berlin? Which is the place you're based right now mostly, right?
Yeah. So I'm from Australia, and as you know, it's very far away. It's an island, and even the cities themselves are far away from each other. So it feels very isolated culturally living there. Having like started my career there, I made some works that I was really proud of, and they were in a festival that had a program of bringing international programmers from festivals, theatres, whatever. And there was a number from Europe, and they saw my work and they liked it, and it led to a couple of opportunities to show my work in Europe. And then from those opportunities, more came, and I felt like, this is exciting and interesting path for me. It's an opportunity to go to Europe and also just perform more, have more chances to be in front of an audience and really different audiences, really different types of engagement.
That's interesting now for me to hear, right? Because as we are talking now in the frame of a European cultural project with partner organizations in like 12 countries, so it's from Finland, Sweden, Belgium, France, Germany, Ufa Studios Berlin would be the partner in Germany, Vienna, but also then Budapest and Bucharest and Sofia and Ljubljana and Zagreb, and I hope I forgot. So it's interesting for me maybe really like to ask you, when you talk about Europe, I think it reminds me that we people over here tend to talk about, you know, like Africa as if it would be a country or something. But what was your first impression? Or could you describe your notion of Europe?
I mean, that was my perception, honestly. I was like, oh, Europe in general. I had no idea how would I describe like the Italian dance scene versus the French versus the German versus the Finnish or whatever, like no idea. So I guess being in these kind of festivals where you get to see work from all of these different places, I could just see how different the practices, the approaches of choreography were. And yeah, maybe not in a way that I could like neatly summarize, but like you sense that sort of texture of things that are talked about through the movement, or the way that it's constructed, the way that they position themselves with the audience. But yeah, I guess one of my first impressions was to do with this kind of intensity and layering of experience, putting work beside other work, and crafting an experience for the audience to go from one thing to another and then into a social gathering or a place to digest what you see. And that was not really something that exists in Australia. There's not many of these kind of dance festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of my first experience of like being in this kind of intense festival setting where you see much the same people but go through this whole journey of like a collection of work, a collection of ideas.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And that to me seems very European because it's putting this sort of collection of things in proximity, and it's so much different, so many different things in proximity compared to Australia, where across the continent it's pretty consistent, the culture, and there's a lot of culture within it, and a lot of diversity, but you just can't compare that kind of short distance travel in Europe and how different things are.
Mm-hmm. I've never been there, but I hear it, of course, from all people who are there, right?
Yeah.
Maybe from our perspective, it's always about the sheer luxury of space.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, and it's so big and open,
mm-hmm.
And the way people live is not as much on top of each other. But that's something that that's what I liked coming to Berlin as well. It's just the intensity, the extremity that it encourages and like seduces you into, like it pulls you into the extreme and to go further and take it further, spend longer. I like how in Berlin there's always a lot of people who aren't living this like normal 9-to-5 life.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a lot of people doing things creatively or just things in a different way, and that's nice to be around.
Mm-hmm. But would there be a sense that, would you say you bring, talking about, because before we started the recording, right, you said you're always also really interested in the questions of archives or living traces also. Would you say that there is still a sense of, let's say, this Australian experience, if you want, or embodied upbringing,
mm-hmm.
in your work?
I think my work is very Australian, and it's like it's very physical, very dancey,
mm-hmm.
like it was a dance, like very present, sort of like dance embodied history of like modern dance and like technique and blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
So I carry that. So it's very like sort of this rigorous physical research. I guess being in Europe, I've like developed more like of the dramaturgy and the kind of conceptual framework in much more detail than I feel like Australian dancers employ. So I've definitely learned a lot of being here and just seeing like how people are doing things, which feels really different. But I definitely, I think a lot about this like embodiment of spatial experience and place. And I feel that I really carry this kind of, I carry this extreme mobility in my body and being in all these different places and going from Europe to Australia, which is like at least 24 hours flying. It's quite a lot of input held in the body.
The title of your piece, it has something with familiar places.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Shortcuts to familiar places. Yeah.
I mean, is this also, what is that title? Because I was always wondering, I was like, I thought, oh, it's instigating lots of associations, mm. but can you maybe say something? Shortcuts to familiar places and what it is?
Well, I like this kind of title, which points to things, but maybe doesn't make sense as one statement. The idea of like a shortcut to a place that that you know or that it's familiar, I kind of envisage that as a circle, like if you're going around a circle or a loop, that you can cut through the circle back to an earlier part in the loop. So these kind of like pathways through and back to something that, that's more familiar, is like a deviation from the path, but coming back to that place you were before, but it's different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's new already. But that is a kind of model for what I did as a practice of like shortcutting back to things from my earlier training and things that I didn't experience myself, but that came from that investigation of lineage and teaching. So going back through my teacher to her teacher, from her teacher to her teacher, I end up in Vienna.
Yes.
And I think that's really interesting also as a visualization of these loops and this distance of travel. You have Gertrud Bodenwieser, who was from the Ausdruckstanz, early Viennese modernism, early 1900s, coming to Australia as a refugee in World War II and bringing that kind of context, cultural context, to somewhere very far, very out of context. And look how that kind of ripples, this echo across generations. And now somebody like me has the opportunity to travel a lot with dance, and the connectivity of the world now makes it possible to bring that back through this big loop in a way. So this notion of travel, I think it goes deep across the generations and deep in the question of what we carry with us in this physical kind of embodied archive.
Mm. I mean, is there something... I will see the piece live. I saw the video. I will see the piece live only tonight. I'm super looking forward to it. With this ball, I mean, did you at the time when of your education, right, or the training, was it a kind of a deliberate choice to dig more intensely, probably, into this Bodenwieser lineage or heritage? Or was it just, I don't know, was it a choice or did it just happen because it was the closest or the evidently available, and excuse my English when I'm talking.
I mean, it's really interesting because the you know, my training, my university Bachelor of Dance or whatever, was much more from the postmodern American kind of lineage of like, Cunningham. And these are the kind of techniques that we were doing, and these more postmodern ideas of dance and like not expressing and not meaning. There's like no manifesto. I think that really was, framing a lot of the thought in my degree, and that went against what I was used to as a child, which was more of this like, what do you have to say through your movement? How do you express that? And so I kind of turned away from that and thought, oh, that's not cool. That's not what I want to do. That's not where my thinking is at. And then, coming back to it as I'm 31, and it's suddenly more interesting to go back to those things that I thought were not relevant to me, but was very relevant actually for a big chunk of my training as a child, and drove me further to keep going in dance initially was this invitation to express myself through movement.
Mm.
And I feel like, even though I struggle with like the fullness of what that was for Bodenwieser, which was that you can express any emotion, like she had this real sort of tanz drama training where you could express emotions like grief and pain and happiness and everything, anything could be expressed. I feel like I struggle to do that kind of more superficial embodiment of emotion, let's say, but I do feel like I've always preferred to dance than speak. I would rather show what I have to say through movement. It's just more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I really get that, that idea of personal expression. I think that's what is really interesting to think about today in a contemporary lens. What does expression look like? How do we do that through movement? How are other artists thinking about expression? Because, I would say there's been a period of dance history where expression hasn't been prioritized.
Almost like a no-go, right? Completely
yeah.
No-go. It's interesting, yeah? I have the feeling, observing specifically, not let's say a younger generation of dancers, dance makers, choreographers, I have the feeling there's almost like a bit like a return to that question. As yep. if one, right?
Yep.
I don't want to call it a trend because I'd be doubtful with those terms, but I just notice, let's say, that there's a recurring interest. And I'm wondering why, partly. And I'm super curious to see in which then also very different ways it's returning. So, but you also have this feeling, or this impression.
I think not only in dance, but if you think about like what young people are today and what education they have, and I feel like at least in like the society that I grew up in, young people are encouraged to be like individual and have their thing that they flourish in and that they have something to say about, and it's less encouraged to like conform or accept the status quo of like, oh yeah, I'll just like do this because it's easy. I think it's like, and also Instagram and whatever, like social media, it pushes you to create an identity, a certain aesthetic about yourself, and that yeah, and that is capitalized and makes money for other people. So I think that's just where we're at now, also in a Western society, is the notion of like individuality, individual expression. It's encouraged and it's like invited to feel necessary.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, right? Because I think as far as I could, I don't know, dig into or understand or try to get a understand, and I come more from literature actually or from writing, with this era, right, of the early 1920s and the way, let's say, individualism or expression of the self, I mean, it's interesting because you mentioned it, right? Because feelings or expressions, that it was still more this kind of allegory thing, right? Or a typology like fear, anger, despair, happiness, and so more linked to characters than a really, really individual liberal notion of the self. So that for me is interesting how you, if that's an interesting almost rupture or material for you to pick that up, maybe this closer link to what would be more generic even, I don't want to call it universal, even though they did at the time. I don't know if whether still like the notion of the soul inhabiting a body would be alive in how you perceive it. I don't know.
I think like for Bodenfieser and Del Sartre or whatever, these kind of, there were ideas of archetypes and certain positions of the body and gestures giving meaning, like sort of more universal idea of emotion as conveyed through the body, which I don't think are as popular now, but that's kind of maybe where it's coming from a little bit at the time. But for me the question is like authenticity, and I kind of struggle to perform this kind of archetypal expression of an emotion that doesn't feel authentic to me, or like that's not how I feel right now, so why am I showing that? That's like where I've always struggled with this idea. So yeah, I don't know, I definitely feel that I want to show something authentic, whatever that means, that it's like it's an honest representation of how I am in that moment. And I think they also, that's also what they wanted as well. They wanted to have that authenticity in what they wanted to show.
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm.
But it was breaking away from ballet, basically, and the beauty, the stories being told. I think this was like a moment to open up the possibility for what could be shown, what could be felt, what could be expressed with a movement language. And also as a soloist, and what could you show from your body and like your viewpoint, rather than like a big ensemble conforming as a sort of cohesive whole. You see these sort of solo careers popping up. And be like, oh, that person does this and that person does that. And I feel like now we're used to that ecosystem. But at the time, I think it was, it was a departure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned it already, right, that with the Gertrude Bodenleser and her way,
mm-hmm.
and the development and the traces of the material, did it something to you to be here now for, I mean, it's just 10 days. You haven't been here before, right? Or have you been here to do some research? And also I think, I mean, only lately there's this scholar, Andrea Amott, here, and also with a part of bunch of dancers who digged into the Wiener Tanzmoderne,
mm-hmm.
which I think was highly timed
mm-hmm.
and also very interesting. So, but was there anything?
Mm-hmm. Like we did the first show on Monday. Today is Wednesday, so I've had a day off in between. But before the show, somebody sent two prints of Bodenwieser from the 1920s, before she came to Australia, pictures of Bodenwieser, and wrote on the back, "Thank you for bringing Bodenwieser back."
Really?
Yeah. And just sent from somebody who cared and have been holding on to that legacy in their own way. But it was kind of just what I wanted from this performance, was to have a sense of like, who sees this? Who's going to respond to this? Who else cares about that that loop and that cycle return?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there is that here, and it's like you can feel it. There's a tangible link, even though it's 100 years have passed.
And maybe it's a really kitschy question almost, or emotional or sentimental question, but just walking through the city, right, or seeing the buildings or listening to the language, or I don't know, whatever it could be, did you have any magic?
Mm.
Feeling?
I feel the vibes of like what was represented in Bodenwieser's art, and that's also what I think was it was special in Australia, because people felt that they were connecting to like one of her works, The Blue Danube,
mm-hmm.
was a Viennese waltz, and when people watched it, they felt like, ooh, like I feel more cultured for I feel like I'm in Vienna and like I have access to that distant kind of European culture, which maybe they only learnt about in school or saw represented in images, but like never seen enacted in like a dance, and that's how I feel when I'm walking around, in a way, is that like you can attach that dance to these buildings and locate that dance somewhere in like a physical architecture.
Interesting.
It makes sense, mm-hmm. But in Australia it was completely out of place, and people enjoyed the oddity and felt that they were touching something that they couldn't otherwise through movement.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it at all? This is a very naive question, maybe, but I could imagine that, let's say, this Austrian world, or even the world of the empire, right, I mean, of course, at Bodenwieser's time, the empire was gone, but there was still the notion of the empire and the struggle with the loss of the empire and so on, right? And modernity coming in and a completely different way to urban life, for example, all those things, right? Specifically for women, losing the corsets and all that thing. But did it also, or would you say it matters that it's not British? I mean, that it's also not part of the, let's say, the Commonwealth, that's this difference?
Yeah, I think, at least from my understanding, is that the British sense of the body is much more prudish and conservative. And so, yeah, what was happening in Vienna in the early 1900s and, like, going outside and fitness craze of, like, you know, let's exercise together as women as well and topless and be naked and do these kind of, radical physical practices together. I think that was very different to what was happening in Britain, and the kind of culture in Australia in the 1900s was very much centered around, like, the British colonial history, which I think, like, dominated most of, you know, most of people's education around that time. So you have Bodenwieser coming in and bringing a completely different attitude towards women and the body and what it could do. And I think that the women that came to her classes were just completely, they knew this is what they wanted to do forever. And they had such fidelity to her, and they taught that method and, like, remembered it their whole lives as being, like, a really important way of expressing, because it gave them a mode of expression. It gave them a place. Also, as dancers, they were paid and they had a means of supporting themselves, even if it was, like, really little and really difficult. But somehow they carved out these tours all over the country into small towns and town halls and played to hundreds of people in small towns. With this kind of really, radical contemporary language at the time.
I think it's still, I mean, only now from the video. It's, for me, it was very touching, not in the kitschy sense now, like, really touching to see that embodied still in the recordings you have in the piece, for example, right? And then also with you and the other dancer dancing in front, and it's also very intriguing to see then the difference, right? Not because of the sheer physical difference of the body and the age, but also the how to relate them to that material from your side. So because I think one can really see how you, I don't know if you like the term now, but for me it was also like you make the struggle very transparent. Whether it would be from a, let's say, very well trained, right, body to dig into that kind of fluidity or something, or even with this expressionist dimension, which then is not getting into the embodiment of an archetype of expression, which I found. I'm very curious to see it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a struggle to... So, I mean, one of the people that's shown in the piece is 108 years old today. And I met her when she was 106, and she taught me one of the dances that they used to do. I think it was made originally in the 20s here, and then it became part of her repertoire, which she restaged in Australia. And this woman, Eileen, was in that piece in the 1940s, and she still remembers it now, and she wanted to teach me. After I'd met her, she's like, "Oh well, I would love to teach you the water lilies," and it was really hard to embody. I have to say, like, when you see her doing it, it's so it's so beautiful, the authenticity of what she's showing, the subtlety of the movement, the softness, but also the freedom within it. Because I guess I was originally trying to learn the actual movement and be faithful to like the shape and the you know, what's the sequence. But for her, it's like, you know, breathe in, breathe out, a bit of twisting and tendril, like, you know, then this is the part where you open up and you form a cross, and one person this way, one person that way. So it's like, it's more broad brush strokes in her mind rather than this kind of micro deconstruction and layering, which maybe I've become more used to through the sort of more postmodern lens of choreography, where you can break down all the components of the body and be really like almost mathematical about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think like Forsyth as well, and the deconstruction of the body into many parts. That's really not what this is.
Mm. Do you happen this different, but do you know Buglaka Bershuk's work, Figuring Age?
No.
Because if not, I have a video or something. This is setting brackets, because Buglaka, she's also based in Berlin. She's originally from Budapest, and she did a piece, and we had it last year in the Attention series. It is called Figuring Age, and she went back to Hungarian dancers from that time. And at that time, she went to visit them. There's also a movie. I could send you the link. Also.
Yeah,
and they were 94 and 96 and 101. And Buglaka made a piece out of that. So let's say the journey is not as far. But it was also very interesting also. Because Buglaka, she has an acting education, but then also she went to parts for a while. So, this is, I don't know, speaking now as a curator, right, for me it was like super interesting and a great pleasure to have also positions in this Attention Young Choreographer series, right, to really go back to specific roots or archives or, the history and bring it into the now.
Yeah,
and in that case, it was the, let's say, really going back to the almost the same generation of those early expressionist dance movements. And for me, it's an interesting, let's say, development right now. What would be from postmodernism, let's say, right, to open up this again, or maybe also to even slightly criticize or to leave a bit the way of the neutral. Now when we come to the festival program, for example, this year, I found it interesting to start with Lucinda Childs and Bob Wilson in a way to kind of have this era or this huge influence brought back on a stage and then to see what developed from there, but also maybe against it.
Yeah.
So this I found rather interesting. I don't know if you... maybe to get back a bit to your stay now, and then I will ask you about your future projects, but is there something you could describe what this residency was about for you?
I would say, because I've also been working on a future project during the day and then seeing these shows in the evening and performing my current show, let's say, I'm really in this place of like thinking about what I'm doing, what have I done and what I'm about to do and what I see in front of me every night, and these different positions in dance, talking about different content or different ways of doing that. So it's like an intensive of thinking about doing and how do we do. So that would be like the main thing I would say about this is like it's an intense multi-layered analysis for myself. It's giving input to understand what I'm doing and what should I do next. You know, I could be I could have done different things. I could have done workshops and been inside other people's processes a bit more intimately, or I could have like seen Vienna and gone out and like understood the cultural context more. But the thing that I guess intuitively go towards is like I want to see the performances. I want to see what people are saying. I want to then process that during the day and come back to what am I doing? How can that help me reflect on my next steps? I feel like that was what I fell into as a way of being in the residency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are your next steps now? I mean, living alone now, that process and how it could eventually inform or change that. Mm-hmm. What are you up to right now?
Well, I'm, I guess, still in this methodology of looking back to look forward, but thinking about a sort of different period of time in Australia, and through an invitation by somebody else who saw this work and liked what I did and asked me, would you do this again, but with a different framework, a different focus. So yeah, it's different because usually it's coming from me and my own question, my own sort of source at work. But this has come from somewhere outside, but then I'm finding my place in it. And yeah, these days it's just been, I've been like on Zoom calls with people who are like really relevant to this particular period of time, which is like the 2000s, the late 2000s, like 2005, 2010. This sort of moment in Australian dance when I was like a teenager, basically. But yeah, I'm really in this moment of it, collecting, listening to people, gathering sources. And yeah, that's how I make work usually. It usually takes a couple of years and it starts in this kind of place of like gathering.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Also interesting, right? That you obviously do not necessarily follow this very short term, right? Also partly pressure which comes from different funding schemes, right? You mm-hmm. have a project, you have, I don't know, 3 months, you kind yeah. of pull it together, screw it together, and then you have two shows and then it's mm-hmm. the next thing. So it's interesting to hear that you're obviously in a different also mode of production
yeah.
or creation.
And that's what being in Europe makes possible, because I think in Australia the typical thing is a very short amount of time to develop things. So you see sort of a sketch of an idea on stage rather than something deeply interrogated. And then it's thrown away because there's no touring. And then you start on a completely new thing. And that's just the status quo. And it's like, to me, it's like, not satisfying, because I want to make work that's like really weighty. Like I want to make something that feels deeply complex, but also it has accessibility. The audience can get into it. They have a way in. But once they're in, there are many places that you can be inside it, many places you can go in your mind. So I feel like to do that, you need so much time to create the bounds of the piece, but then study the language. What can you do to draw those connections? It needs so much rehearsal for me. I just feel like you need so much time. And if it was any less, I wouldn't be happy with it.
I mean, yes. I think it's still also in Europe, in Western Europe, it's also the reality for most young makers, like this one shot, two shot.
Yeah.
I think, but yes, it's always interesting and for me very encouraging also to hear, you know, that there are completely different ambitions also when it comes to relations towards an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And referring to the talk we had in the beginning of the festival, right, with the attention artists who were here and the Atlas people and the Impact people, and still sorry that it turned out to be so panel-like, but we found no other way how to do it, and I found the variety of answers like super interesting. I remember very well then also what Beck said, right, about like your touring, that you go to the so-called periphery, or that you're just touring, right? It does not necessarily always Brussels, Vienna, Paris, I don't know.
Yeah.
So this is also, I think, a very interesting way to tackle those questions.
Yeah, and it's also how I can take 2 years to make a piece, because, you know, I get one performance in a month, let's say. I can earn enough to pay my basics, and then I'm not, like, urgently needing to take another job or, like, quickly push out, a production so I can get a grant to, you know, pay time in a studio. And I also think, yeah, the types of grants and attitudes towards funding have shifted since COVID, and I think there's more of an understanding of, like, time spent between production and what you need to do to, like, make good work. And, yeah, I've been lucky in Berlin to get this kind of, you know, Tanzpraxis stipendium, which, yeah, is designed, it's not for production, it's like, you know, a month wage or whatever to be, just be. Just be an artist, do what you need to do. I feel like it opens up so much more for me. I can do things that are not about making money but need to be done, or I can offer my time to something that, you know, like access to my work and thinking about a layer of how would somebody who is blind or vision impaired experience this work? What kind of tools do we need to make? Who can we talk to make those tools and be involved in that? So that's the kind of thing that we need to do more and less, like, produce more content, you know. How do we share what we're doing and have these, like, human connections? And, yeah, touring makes that possible, I think, because it's a way of keeping the work alive, meeting new audiences, and then, you know, also making money, and, like, making money as the performer so that you can do other things in between.
For me, I could now say thank you. It was super interesting.
Yeah,
is there anything you want to ask me or you want to add?
Not necessarily. No, I also wanted to say thank you. And it's such an honor to be in this context of eight tension, where I look back at the, you know, people who've been through it over the history, and it's, you know, really amazing artists that have done really amazing things, inspiring things in their careers since that. You know, this is a moment now, and this group, I'm sure, is going to go on and do, like, really amazing work. So it feels really nice to be invited into that and to be, in this really intense but stimulating and rewarding experience that is being in impulse tanz.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographer series. For more artist conversations, visit the websites lifelongburning.eu and impulstanz.com.